Elizabeth Elliot studied Greek in college with the goal of working as a Bible translator. Shortly after arriving in Ecuador, she married fellow missionary Jim Elliot, who was later killed while trying to reach out to the fierce Alca Indians, also known as the Wadani. Soon after the tragic incident, Elizabeth took her 3-year-old daughter Valerie, and they lived among the same Indian tribe that had killed her husband. Here on Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth shares with us the insights from her remarkable journey as a daughter, mother, wife, widow, and missionary. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about one step at a time. Each time they got together to plan the next step of Operation Alca, there were new ideas, new things to pray about. God did not give them a blueprint. It was one step at a time. We've thought a little bit about how each of us has a story. God is the one who's writing that story, and He knows exactly what's going to be in every chapter and how it's going to end. You and I don't know anything about what's going to happen in the next minute. We only have one step at a time. You're where you are, and I'm sitting in a studio where I am right now, talking to you. It's one step at a time. And as we're looking at the story of five American missionaries who wanted to reach a people called the Alcas with the gospel, they could only take one step at a time. Obedience to God is one step at a time. I'm told that in olden days, in the Holy Land, a tiny clay lamp was sometimes attached to the thong of a sandal, so that as a man walked, there was just enough light cast by that tiny lamp for him to take the next step. I think that's the way it very often is with God's leading. His word is a lamp unto our feet. As we take that one step, then God gives us the light for the next one. Obedience is the key. Well, the men were dropping gifts from a small plane to these people, hoping that the gifts would convince the savages of the friendship of the white man. One day, a Quechua fishing party was down on the Curaray River, which is on the border of Alca territory, and they knew that the missionaries were dropping gifts to the Alcas in that area, and they realized that no gifts were likely to be dropped to them as long as the people in the airplane thought that they were Quechuas. And so, smart guys that they were, they stripped off all their clothes, grabbed sticks, went out onto the sand strip, and waved at the plane, hoping that the pilot would think that these were Alcas down there, since they were wearing no clothes. Then Ed McCauley, who was sharing these flights with Nate, wrote in his diary, "It's time we were getting closer to them on the ground." And then to Jim, he wrote this, "I've been giving the trip some thought, and I feel this way. We should set a definite limit on the number of days we will wait on the Curaray for them, and if they don't show, we should be ready to go in to them." I should tell you that the decision had been made to set up a camp on a little beach on the Curaray River, and Ed was not feeling that they should wait indefinitely at the camp before they actually went to the Alca settlement. He goes on, "For myself, I am definitely ready to go in and feel that it would be reasonably safe, if we can ever use that term, in our initial ground contact with these people. We should go in, one, wearing the headdresses," meaning the headdresses made out of feathers which the Alcas had given to the men by means of the bucket drop. "Number two, carrying small airplanes such as I have hanging here," meaning some little balsa models of planes which matched the plane that had been making the gift drops, so that when the Alcas saw the missionaries on the ground, they would associate these small planes with the one that dropped gifts. "Number three, carrying gifts wrapped as we have been wrapping them," again for identification with the same group. "Number four, shouting Biti Miti Poni Mupa," Alca for "I like you," or other phrases that we are making familiar from the plane. God being with us, and up to this point we have every confidence that He is, I think this would put us in. The whole project is moving faster than we had originally dared to hope, and while I'm not forgetting ahead of God, I feel that we shouldn't lag. One of the areas of serious and prolonged discussion was the matter of firearms. Should the men bear arms in order to protect themselves? I remember Nate saying that the first shot fired would signal the failure of the entire project and the scuttling of any hopes for the future. But that didn't mean that the presence of arms might not perhaps be a deterrent. I find the present-day discussions of nuclear arms as a deterrent to be very interesting, looking at it from the perspective of our experience with the Alka Indians. Our discussions about whether to take firearms or not always depended upon an assumption that the Alkas themselves would respond as we ourselves might respond. But of course, we were dealing with people whose minds we could not read. When we speak of nuclear armament and countries with which we might be at war, we are assuming that they would respond as we might respond, and of course, we know nothing of the kind. So round and round went the discussions. Two of the men felt that they would never bear arms. They were conscientious objectors. Three of the men felt, on the other hand, that it was legitimate indeed, under certain circumstances, for Christians to be armed. But none of the five felt that they would ever want to have to shoot anyone. They hoped that the mere presence of the weapons would be sufficient to give the Alkas pause. So it was decided that those who wished to bear arms would have them available, but certainly keep them hidden until worse came to worst, and they might have to let the people know that they had them. Alkas knew what guns were because Quechuas hunt with guns, and some Quechuas who had been hunting with guns had been killed by Alkas in former years. So on one of Nate's flights, he dropped paint pigment on the sand of a sand strip that he found on the Kodiak River. He dropped these paint pigment packages at 7-second intervals at 65 miles an hour, which enabled him to measure off that the length of that natural sand strip was between 190 and 210 yards, just barely enough for him to land his small plane. Then on one of his sweeps down, he actually touched the wheels lightly to the sand, discovered that it was gravel and it was smooth. His next idea was that they should have a prefabricated house. Jim had some power equipment back at our station in Shandia, so he volunteered to prefabricate the house, cut the pieces, and Nate figured out a way that he could strap those pieces underneath the plane and fly them in little by little, and the men could then build a tree house which would give them a measure of safety during the night. One day when they were flying over, they thought they saw a man with a lance near an Alka house. But on their next swoop over, the lance was no longer in sight. Perhaps he was just going hunting and he didn't want the missionaries to feel that he was threatening them in any way. Then the plan was that they would set up their camp, put the treehouse up, and commit 5 days to waiting for the Alkas to come to them. They would have supplies for 2 weeks in the treehouse, just in case there was a flood so that they were not able to fly the plane in or out. And the possibility was always in the back of their minds that there might be a siege. The next step was to drop photographs of themselves, which they had enlarged to almost life size of their faces, so that when the Alkas met them face to face on the ground, they might recognize the faces that they had seen in the airplane. Does this seem incredible to you? Well, Nate was such a skilled flyer that he was able to fly low enough so that they could not only see the faces of the Alkas, but they were sure that the Alkas were able to see their faces as well. One day they received in the bucket, which Nate had lowered to the Alkas, a bird with a half-eaten banana. Then one day, when Mary Lou was in her station in Atahuno, Fermin, a Quechua Indian, came running in. He said, "Alkas have been on the path." And she said, "Did you see them?" "No," he said, "but I saw some more footprints." He said, I've got my gun here. I'm going to go out after them, but I don't have any powder. Give me some powder. Well, Mary Lou had gunpowder in the little store that they ran for the Indians, but she refused to give him any. And she took her own machete and went out on the trail calling for the Alcas. Mary Lou McCully was at this point 7 months pregnant. She was the mother of two little boys. But there was no question in her mind but that God was in Operation Alca, and any part that she might have, she wanted to take without fear. So she went out calling out these friendly phrases, come, come and see us, we are your friends. Later on, the men dropped beef, chocolate, manioc, cookies, candy, and beads. Each time they got together to plan the next step of Operation Alca, there were new ideas, new things to pray about. God did not give them a blueprint. It was one step at a time. The wisdom that he gave them, the circumstances, the weather, the way things were working, the little encouragements that they received from the friendly gifts that the Alcas gave them, all of these things worked together to convince the men that the time for Operation Alca was drawing very close. They thought of the word in the psalm that says, as thou goest, step by step, I will open up the way before thee. Follow the shepherd. Look at the facts. Study them. Pray. Counsel. Use your head. Plan carefully. Do the next thing. Maybe you still feel confused about some major decision that you have to make, something that looks so complicated. Just do one thing, the one simple thing that you can do now. And don't be afraid.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.